The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Thursday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM, pardon me, channel 189.
Yes, sir.
Yes,
well done.
Got it.
Nailed it.
It's Gil Alexander. That's Kelly Bidlett. And yes, we're both wearing patterned shirts. This was not planned.
I'm always wearing a patterned shirt.
Are
too.
You?
Like usually.
I like how you rolled up your sleeves, though.
They're also usually rolled up.
Really ready to get down to business.
That's right, man.
Thursday means one thing here. Zach and Crack. Zach Cohen, college football, tennis. Hope he's having better luck than I have. Get to that in a minute. And then Bill Krakenberger, of course, unscripted with the Crack Man. Bill Krakenberger, final hour of the show. This show is packed in with guests.
Stacked.
Pack it in. Let us begin.
Yes.
Cleve T.A. also here today, talking NFL with us. Two things specifically. Survivor, because he's got a Survivor tool that could do all kinds of things. We'll get into that. And week one thoughts across the National Football League with Cleve T.A. Looking forward to that. And then, Right Angle Sports, Mike Reardon will join us as well for a live release of a college football play in week number one. Week zero didn't go so well. Not going to lie.
Nope.
Didn't go so well.
But hey, 1 week.
1 week.
1 week, one pick, right?
1 week does not make a career. I talked to Dr. Bob yesterday. Bob is back on Fridays starting next week. He couldn't do this week.
Bobby!
He's back doing NFL with us. Just won't do college football. He immediately launched an NFL talk with me on the phone yesterday.
Really?
Oh, my God. He's giddy talking about it.
I mean, I'm sure he is because he's not doing the college football, so he's got more time on his hand. I kind of want to talk to Bob for like five minutes about what else he's doing.
This is exactly what he and I talked about all these years, and I reminded him of this. I said, Bob, the day that you slough off sports, I know you. You are simply going to spend more time on the ones you have left.
He goes,
that's exactly what I'm doing.
Yep.
Tim.
Well, whatever. That just means we get even better NFL stuff.
Now, the only question is, do we do them after Fezzik or before Fezzik? That's the only question.
Before?
Yeah.
Okay.
What did we used to do? I don't remember.
I think before.
Did we do it before? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Wasn't he like 8:30-ish?
8:45, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're just having a programming conversation.
Yeah. Just meeting.
Okay, let me get the bat out of the way first. Tennis yesterday. Couldn't be any worse. First of all, we had the two matches that were a layover from the previous day. Those split. So the final tally on the 8-win day was 4-4, and we made like a half unit because it was another dog that won. Yesterday, I had 6 plays, Kelly. They were all dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And none of them won, and they weren't particularly close. I think the one, Katie McNally, I think we probably got.
I was sweating that one out at the gym. That was relatively close. I mean, she won the first set, right?
Well, yeah, what the distance, but what I was referring to is that, like, I think the breakpoint numbers, she was 3 of 13. Yeah, that's not good. So I guess we had a shot in that one, but we didn't have a shot in any of the others. It was a bad day all around. Again, the only silver lining, they were all dogs, not like we're laying money, but this just is sort of a reminder of how this tournament has gone, that the dogs that have won have not been the ones you would suspect. The fact that Nakashima wasn't such a big surprise, but Fisa and Djokovic being the biggest examples of that. And I guess the other silver lining is our futures got through yesterday. Carlitos got through to round number 3. Daniil Medvedev got through to round 3. So there was that. Remember, Daniil's got to win 5 matches. He's won 2 so far. Carlos for the quarter, 7-1. Carlos has to win 7 matches to win it all. Carlos looking good. But 0-6 yesterday. There's no way to sugarcoat it. It was just an awful day. Day to night.
Yeah, I hear you, man. It happens, right? 0-3 for me. Tailed along a couple. And then did you catch? I don't know if you were tracking my parlay. Remember the parlay I put together?
I was tracking. Oh, Hodar was the other one.
Hodar!
Like, the upsets that are coming through are the ones you would. I mean, what was that?
What was that? Well, you and I were laughing during a break yesterday because I was making fun of this guy that Hodar's playing. I'm like, boo, Yanka Hote's out there. Like, there's no way. I got to play Hodar. Hodar against this guy.
What did you call him?
I can't get his name right at all, man.
You mispronouncing the Japanese for scallop at the end there? Hotate?
Exactly. And then I saw him in action, and Boo looked like a legend, man.
This is the thing about betting individual sports, though. You just don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And Hodar, like, none of that, I wasn't involved, but you had it in a brain-dead parlay.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great example. 6-2, 6-1, 6-1. What?
Got smoked. From a lucky loser.
So anyway, terrible day yesterday. Today, only two. They're both dogs again. Let's try it again. Again, you hit a couple of these, you're, you're right back where you were almost. Benjamin Bonzi versus Ignacio Busse. Plus 123 on Bonzi on the men's side. Ladies' side, Yulia Putintseva. Plus 235 versus Zhang Xinwen. Those are the only plays.
Back to the old Bonzi scheme. All right.
Bonzi and Putintseva, there you go. After, again, I'll say it one more time. Disaster day yesterday. Okay. The big news of the day in sports yesterday, though, and this is Ryan Kelly's wheelhouse of the National Basketball Association, Kawhi Leonard. The punishment has come down from the NBA on the Los Angeles Clippers to a lesser extent on Kawhi Leonard. This is a victory, first and foremost, for Pablo Torre, our friend, Pablo Finds Out podcast.
That's right.
First of all, let's just say that.
I can't even believe, though, how much of, like, the congratulations he was getting yesterday. Because I don't, like, if you knew, you knew. Right? It was one of those, like, for the past year, he's been nailing this stuff.
He's just been all over this. And essentially, again, the nuts and bolts of this is that the NBA released their findings into the year-long investigation of the Clippers and Kawhi, punishing both for violating salary cap circumvention rules when the team signed Leonard to an extension in 2021. We talked about this at length on this show, which is essentially the Clippers being, boy, as this super blatant about this, man. Punishments include, by the way, a $30 million fine and suspension for owner Steve Ballmer for 1 year. By the way, what that means is he can't even, you know how he's always in the seat at the games? He can't do that for a year.
Just spend,
he can't be anywhere near the team.
Imagine spending billions of dollars to build any kind of building and then being told you can't go in it for a year.
Can't go in it. Plus suspensions for team president of business operations, Jillian Zucker. She got the worst. She was like the most blatant of anything.
Did you read the report?
Setting these up. Oh, yeah, I did.
I read the whole report. Oh, man, she got stuff done.
Jillian, you got stuff done, and now you're getting stuff done at you. And president of basketball operations, Lawrence Frank, it's 6 months without pay. Jillian Zucker got 1 year without pay. Clippers, here's the basketball part of this. Clippers must also forfeit, though, Kelly. First round picks in 2029, 2030, 2031, 2032, 2033. Add the picks that they sent to OKC in the first place back in 2019 to acquire Paul George and secure Leonard's free agent signing. Remember, it was a package deal per the Leonard camp. LA will have given up a total of 10 first rounders to acquire and retain Leonard. There it is on the screen. Man. And Kawhi gets the proverbial slap on the wrist. He gets $700,000 fine, and he's free to be traded to the Raptors. Like, he's like, cool, I'm going back.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
Look at this. By the way, shout out Tomer Azarli, my mishpocha, apparently, who put this out here. This is just, look at it in like written form. It's worse.
It's wild. I mean, look, it barely fits on the screen.
It's incredible.
How much the Clippers had to ship, how much they shipped out to bring Kawhi in, and they're going to lose.
Oh, and by the way, they also traded Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, bearing the headline.
Yes. Shai is also involved in this process, yeah.
So in the end, this is about as SMU death penalty as the NBA can give. Like, this was the maximum allowed under the NBA law. In other words, remember the Joe Smith, for those who are of a certain age, Joe Smith Minnesota Timberwolves thing when David Stern cracked down on an under-the-table deal that the T-Wolves had with Joe Smith? That was 5 lost first-round picks as well. And then record fine of $3.5 million. Remember, this is $30 million. Also suspensions for the owner and executives as well. This one is $30 million. Why, Kelly? Because the league appears to have imposed the maximum allowed fine for cap circumvention, $7.5 million per company, 4 companies it believes the Clippers conspired with to circumvent the cap rules. That's how they ended up with $30 million.
Yep.
Per Brian Windhorst. I mean, so by the way, the Clippers, they're fighting this. The Clippers are saying this is hogwash. This is balderdash. I can't come up with anything else. Clippers believe that their actions connecting interested companies to Leonard for possible endorsement deals constitutes a role as a middleman. Yeah, we're just a middleman. The league rules permit that. The investigators, whoever, said that's bunk. I don't believe they used that word, but they said it's bunk, basically paraphrasing. They said they presented findings that they feel show the team flagrantly, the key word, and repeatedly broke cap circumvention rules, and the Clippers took actions to make it appear through emails that they were acting within the rules. So the Clippers knew exactly what they were doing at every step of the way. Remember, the Clippers back in 2015 also had a little incident with the NBA, and then
this is like strike 4.
Yeah, and even with Kawhi earlier, yes, there was an investigation, and they pulled back on that one. So this is just like finally Adam Silver grew a pair.
Right.
Because his commissionership, I don't know if that's a word, a commissionership, has been, the real headline has been, he just wants to be friends with the players so bad. And by the way, you could actually say this. Well, Kawhi got the least of it. So maybe it's still inconsistency with that.
He made tens of millions of dollars off his sponsorship, and he's going to get fined $700,000. That's it. I love that you brought that up, because it is, you just go back to 2018. They got slapped on the wrist for trying to pull this stuff with DeAndre Jordan. Kawhi Leonard. During that free agency, and Uncle Dennis, who's been a character in the NBA ever since Kawhi Leonard's stardom has grown,
dude,
he got, everybody knew this was going on, but the NBA caught them, and this is all in the Wachtell Lipton report, caught Uncle Dennis trying to ask for extra things from all these teams, and once he ended up going to the Clippers, the NBA opened an investigation. How little did Steve Ballmer care about the NBA's investigation?
It's incredible.
Less than a year later, start diving in with four companies to circumvent the salary.
And by the way, this is how it all started, because the Lakers, who had been one of the teams trying to get him, were like, hey, you probably should know about this Uncle Dennis guy and what he's asking for us. Kawhi Leonard, this is Kawhi Leonard's statement. Quote, this is totally Kawhi talking, right? Integrity and respect for this game are fundamental to who I am. Listen to this sentence. I accept full responsibility for lapses in judgment by people within my inner circle. I'm not even going to go on. In a matter of, what's that, 12 words, he said, I accept full responsibility for lapses in judgment by people within my inner circle. So, hey, it's on me. Those guys did it.
Yeah, my bad, but it was not me.
Oh, oy vey schmears. We'll talk more about this next. It's a baseball. It's a numbers game.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Football is back, and VSiN Pro gives you everything you need to bet smarter this season. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get instant access to our updated NFL betting guide featuring posts, preseason updates, week one betting systems, contest strategies, and fresh best bets for VSiN's experts. You also receive our college football betting guide with previews of all 138 FBS teams, power ratings, proven betting systems, and best bets for VSiN's sharpest minds. Your VSiN Pro subscription also includes daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop tools, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app, and you can get started for just $9.99 or save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Let's see what the best listeners in the game have to say, shall
we? What they got?
Chance Gopperpot, I am so excited to talk Pablo Torre and Steve Ballmer today with y'all. Pablo effed around and found out last night's pod was great from him. That year of investigation really paid off. Pablo Torre should just take a lap.
Amazing, man. It's a lap. For journalism classes and schools, this is something that will be talked about for decades to come.
Rocco Salperto. Gil, when crack is on, ask him if he's aware of the investment made by Boyd Gaming in North Vegas. Atlantis Casino and Horse Sportsbook remodel just took it from the worst room in Vegas to one of the nicest. No seat charges. I know where I will be spending my Sundays. Oh, okay. I didn't know that about what's happening over there in Reno. Aliante Casino, not Atlantis. Pardon me. Aliante Casino Horse and Sportsbook remodel. Pardon me, Rocco. LFC title records. Flying from Minnesota to Vegas tomorrow night to sign up for millions. While I'm there, I might as well help Kelly get his escalator company off the ground. How about Jillian Zucker to head up HR?
Hey, she gets stuff done. She gets stuff done. And the escalator's still being worked on.
And Buddhist talking about Boo knocking out Rafa Hodor yesterday. Never doubt my Chinese cousin Boo Yu against
him. He looked like I don't even know. He looked like prime Novak Djokovic out there.
Okay, I don't have much more to say about the Clippers. I just want to say this one thing.
Okay.
This being we just went through the equivalent of like a half-decade death penalty. Now, I should point out in the Minnesota Timberwolves case back in 2010, I believe it was 2010? 2000, pardon me,
yeah,
2000
earlier,
with Joe
yeah.
Smith. They docked him, David Stern docked him 5 first-round draft picks. They did end up getting a couple back. So there is that the Clippers can sort of, at least, I don't know if hang your hat is the right term there, for not right phrase there,
yeah,
but at least they have that to sort of look back as precedent on. So this may not end up being 5.
But also, they're going to trade Kawhi, which they're going,
and they're going
likely,
to get two,
and they'll get
two back
yes.
that way. Right.
Do you want to know how I read into that, though, by the way, with that whole scenario of how they could get two back? I think this is a test by the NBA to Clippers. How do you react to this? And are you going to try to drag this out and make this a legal issue with Steve Ballmer and all his billions of dollars?
They 100% are.
Which they definitely are. So
yes.
I don't know that this is the same thing as, like, I don't think those draft picks are coming back. When we stretch this out, there is the one thing I wanted to bring up, because a couple statements from the Clippers after this, okay? And this is the thing that I started to think about for the past couple months, Gil, and we talked about it lightly on the show. But like Pablo Torre just continuing to come out with story after story on this involving company and another company, yeah, another company. It's impossible to not think at some point, if the Clippers are doing this with all of these companies, what's to think that the other NBA teams are not doing the same thing?
Yep.
And another thing on that, we've seen examples of this in college football this offseason. The SEC strikes this deal, and we're trying to get pro players in to play on LSU. What happens? Everybody else in college football loses their mind because it is an unfair advantage by LSU, rightfully so, right? Where are all the other NBA teams and players losing their minds over the unfair advantages that the Clippers and Kawhi are getting? They're quiet. Why are they quiet?
Yeah, it's a great point, Kelly. When we didn't really, like with the LSU thing, we haven't heard the end of that, because now the Georgia Attorney General is saying if LSU takes on players back from the pros, that they should fire Lane Kiffin immediately.
Right.
You know, like, it's just, so it's legal. Who knew we'd be in this legal muck?
It's crazy.
In both of these.
And I got to finish my one point. I'm sorry, I forgot this quote. So what I was leading to, one of the quotes from the Clippers statements yesterday, okay? We are confident that if the league spent $50 million investigating any team, it would find plenty of instances of team personnel's making introductions to both sponsors and vendors in response to players' requests.
Wow. So they're saying, don't try us, we'll name names.
Don't try us, we'll name names. And we've got Steve Ballmer with endless pockets. I am very fascinated to see where this goes from here.
There was another line in the whole thing. I don't know if you caught this from the NBA that said, also, the NBA is now banning hardwood handicappers, John Von Tobel and Kelly Bidlin, from making any value, quote-unquote, bets on the Clippers for at least 1 or 2 years.
That's fair, Gil.
I don't know if you saw that.
That's fair.
That's in there. It's in there as well. We get a ban on that for a little while.
Oh, man.
The suspension of activities. No, that's a great pickup by you, because you want to do this?
You want to play?
We
got the richest owner in the NBA.
Last thing,
play?
The last thing I promised this time, by the way, we actually throw up the Clippers betting profile. There you go.
To be thorough.
30 and a half wins to be thorough, to miss and make playoffs, to win the Pacific Division, to win the Western Conference, to win the NBA Finals. Good luck to all of you. The Clippers one topic sentence that sat with me also was, this is an investigation where the result was predetermined by those that, This sounds like right at Pablo.
Yeah.
This is a result that was predetermined, and the facts were then, so I'm paraphrasing, the facts were then retrofitted to that result.
Yeah. I think every response the Clippers have had is just complete nonsense. Pablo nailed it. The Wachtell Lipton law firm comes in and nails them. Like, they're scrambling for anything. But that sentence I just read, that's their last strand of hope.
Yeah.
If we threaten to bring down others.
David Shalafour says on Twitter, he says, yo, it used to be a bad day when Mike Wallace knocked on your door. Mike Wallace was on 60 Minutes,
right,
Kelly,
yeah,
for those of a certain age. Now it's Pablo Torre. $700,000 is a joke also for Kawhi. Yes, it is. You know who the only 60 Minutes exception was? Our guy Jay Cohen that was on with us last week. When Morley Safer, it wasn't Mike Wallace, but Morley Safer in 60 Minutes, when they were on 60 Minutes, they were doing a whole piece on World Sports Exchange. They were made to look spectacularly. It was just...
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was,
that's great.
They were the one exception. Can I shout out, not even a VEASAN on-air guy, but a VEASAN producer?
Yes. The great Justin Emery I believe you're going.
The great Justin Emery is exactly where I'm going. Justin Emery is the producer for Money Moves, which is not directly after us. Prop Points is on for an hour, and then it's Money Moves with Stormy and JVT. And Justin wrote a piece at VEASAN.com. By the way, and here's the tweet from VEASAN above the article, which you can click on, but this is at VEASAN Live on Twitter. He said, Kyle Harrison started it all, and it became a betting endeavor worth nearly 170 units to date. That's Wishnev-esque, is what that is. Justin Emery Shows, that's his Twitter handle, Justin Emery Shows debut article on betting the MLB Daily Strikeout Leader Prop and how it led to one of the best betting runs he has ever had. It's a great piece, and I got to shout out Justin. Justin, who I interact with when we're sort of lingering after this show.
Yeah, he
comes
right
in early
us,
for money moves. Justin usually has a word or two to say about whatever subject. He's got opinions.
Especially if it's Philadelphia sports.
That's right. He's a big Philadelphia sports fan. But this is a great article. I have to tell you, what resonated with me so much about that was this is a guy who was betting. He was betting strikeout props for starting pitchers every day, right? Over, under 6.5 strikeouts, over, under 5.5, whatever it was lined at for starting pitchers throughout Major League Baseball slate every day. And then he discovered this MLB Daily Strikeout Leader prop. So instead of doing the individual over-unders, there was just the, oh, for more bang for his buck, if he could get the guy, if he could pick the guy that would have the most in that given day of MLB slate, of the most, who would end up with the most strikeouts. And it, he goes through a step-by-step process on how he shifted his thinking, how his previous handicapping helped him. He was already had a head start on it. What he looks at for this kind of thing, but what it was a great snapshot into a bettor's mind. And usually when someone is having sort of their betting early days, when they're starting to discover things that work for them, but it was a great window into the evolution of his brain and how he was able to take something that was kind of hit or miss. And then, wow, what I've been handicapping now I can shift to this market, and now I'm asking myself a different question. And I'll let the article speak for itself at that point. It was just, I thought he did a wonderful job. So shout out to Justin.
Me too. I'll be honest, I haven't read the entire article yet, just because Justin and I have talked about this for a few times, I would say, going through the course of this season. And he's kind of, you know, let me know how he's evolved and kind of how he's changed. And I knew he was having a ton of success. I didn't realize it was up to this number, but like you said, man, I think a great example of how you evolve as a bettor, right? Mm-hmm. And how do you maybe it's something something you're doing okay with, right? But is there ways to get from pretty good to great?
Yeah,
Justin figured out his,
and he does a wonderful job also, not only of, you know, what stats he looks at, but he actually researches what is the point in the market that ends up with the most winners. Is it the shortest shot? Is it the longest shots? Or is it somewhere in between?
Love that.
What is the number that he's actually looking to get at with these pitchers on a daily basis? What's the number of strikeouts that usually wins on a daily basis? He does all of that kind of thinking. He was super intellectually curious about it. I can't recommend it enough. Again, Justin Emery, go to VSiN Live's Twitter and you can click on that article for his MLB Daily Strikeout Leader prop expertise. Coming back, Zach Cohen, tennis, and, well, he'll say something about
a numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you place a bet this week, ask yourself one question. Why this number? Not who you like, not your gut. Why is the spread actually worth betting? BTB Analytics gives you a real answer. Their models independently price every NFL and college football game, then compare that projection directly against the market. You get the model spread, the current market line, the cover probability, and a quantified edge showing exactly where and by how much their numbers disagree with the book. They beat the market every year since launch, profitable 3 years running, verified through BetStamp. Scan the QR code or go to btb-analytics.com and use code VSIN for 10% off. That's btb-analytics.com. I didn't know I was on camera.
Check it out now.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. How you guys doing? Sorry. Oh, there you go. That's what was supposed to happen. I was doing it. There it is. btb-analytics.com. So I've said this before. Usually I'm referring to like basketball or football. Not sometimes tennis actually also. But I remember there was like a Wisconsin college basketball game that I had Wisconsin laying the points. And they were nowhere near covering the whole game, and you caught overtime, and then in overtime they like won by 9, and I had no business winning like 8.5.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, and it was one example of when stuff you're not supposed to win goes your way. There's no science behind this. I'm just telling you what my experience is. When stuff you're not supposed to win goes your way, it is often followed by this amazing run. The opposite is true as well. Like when you have things you're supposed to win and somehow the gods conspire against you and you lose, it's like, okay, the worst is about to come too.
Yep.
That just, and for me, again, the tennis yesterday, we had the three plays the first day up 6-2, 5-2 match point, lost. 2 points away in another match, lost. 5-2 in the fourth, one game away, lost. Right? There was like three of them, and you're like, oh God. Oh God. And then yesterday was the 0-6. And you're like, okay, here we go. This is exactly what happens.
Hot streaks and cold streaks are real, people. Doesn't matter if we're talking sports betting. Doesn't matter if you're talking and hitting the casino. It happens.
Let's see if Zach Cohen's had more luck than I had with the U.S. Open. Zach joins us now courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at BettingOnX. He, of course, all his stuff, sport by sport at vsin.com. Strewn throughout the network is his face. Zach joins us now courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, as I said. What up, Zach?
What's going on? How you doing?
Doing well. How's your Open going?
It's been up and down. I feel exactly what you just said. I think that after Robin Montgomery blew that 4-0 lead in the second set against Maria Sakkari, I couldn't win a match. Last night, I got back on track, so I'm hoping to keep it going today.
Nice. Who'd you have last night, by the way?
I had Ann Lee. I had, who else did I add? I had Echeverry. I had a few. So, yeah.
Oh, good for you.
I was on the right side of most of those last night.
Good for you. Okay, today you have three plays, all on the men's side. What do you have?
Yeah, so one of the ones I have is Popperin money line against Tabilo. It's plus 126. Popperin is number 130 in the world, but he is definitely better than that number. Like, this is a guy that won a 1,000-level tournament in Canada. He's really dangerous on hard courts, and I do like the matchup because he's a really good server, and Tabilo is a really poor returner. So I think at the very least, you're going to see Popperin working himself deep into a lot of these sets. And I like, you know, ticking players where it's going to be kind of a coin toss towards the end of sets. I think there's going to be a really good chance he wins that match. Then I also took Struff plus 143 against Cerundolo. I feel like Cerundolo is just checked out after winning Queen's Club. Like, he's 2-4 in his last six matches. Some of the losses have been really, really bad, you know, against players that you would never expect him to lose to. And even some of the wins have been more competitive than you'd think that they would have had to have been. And Struff is a player that does really well at the slams. He made the quarterfinals at Wimbledon, made the fourth round here last year, just has a really big serve and a really straightforward game. And Cerundolo, I think, can get in his own head. So I think that's a really good price. And then Dalibor Cercina, money line plus 128 against Luciano Dardari. Dardari's a really good player, but for whatever reason, it just has not translated to hard courts at all. Like, he's like 17-37 in his career. At some point, I expect that to flip. I think I maybe talked about this on the show before because he has, you know, a really good forehand. He's a solid server. I don't really know why he can't find a way to win on hard courts a little bit more consistently, but I do think this is a really good spot to back Cercina, who is a very good returner as well. And a really unique player from the baseline where he like steps into the court and kind of rushes you a little bit.
Popperin, Struff, and Cercina for Zach. Three dogs. Oh, boy. I hope you have better luck than I do with my two today.
I have Bonzi, by the way. I'm with you on that one. I got plus 110, though.
We're on Bonzi together.
The Bonzi scheme. Kelly's back
what
in.
What could go wrong? this is maybe for a tennis pod more than because it's a little for tennis hardos. But what's interesting is that you have faded three traditional clay quarters here. And I just want to say this is just like one topic says we'll get to the who you think looks best to win it now. But the traditional clay court players who we used to in past years, we say, they're more of a clay court player. They got no shot here. It feels like to me, these clay court players are just as a group way better on hard courts now than they used to be. Like, the gap is not nearly as wide. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, this wasn't like an intentional thing where I was fading them. It was really more about the players that they're playing against. But I completely agree. Like, Tarante in Cincinnati was a player I'm like, I'm going to fade him every single round. He killed me. So, yeah, there's been a lot of this. I do think that play has kind of slowed down a little bit. And, you know, you kind of hear that from some of the players occasionally that a lot of the faster surfaces are getting a little bit slower year by year. So maybe these guys have more of a chance than they have in past years.
Yeah, U.S. Open in round two here again today as we head to the business end next week. And again, tennis has the decency. The slam ends with the men's final on the first Sunday of NFL football. And then it's all football from that point forward. So what I was saying earlier in the show was, I'm picking all these dogs. It's just that the dogs you wouldn't expect to win are the ones winning. Like Rafa Hodar, what was that yesterday? What was that performance?
Well, shocking. Shocking. And he said after the match, like, he wasn't injured or anything. He just played poorly. But, like, playing poorly, you should still be able to beat that opponent or at least win a set. It was really, really surprising. I think that, you know, between him and Arthur Fils, it was a really poor outing, like for a tournament where we all kind of expected these guys to make runs. I mean, I know Feast was in a tough portion of the draw. We kind of noted that right away. But again, I didn't really see him losing to Tsitsipas, who, by the way, yes, looked great yesterday too. Yeah. All of a sudden, he's back.
I had Lloyd Harris.
It's Oglu in his corner.
Yeah, I had Lloyd Harris as a big dog. Lloyd Harris wins the first set and then gets run. Okay, and then yep. Last thing on this, you've only seen a round and a half, as all of us have. What's your instinct on who wins both sides now, men's and women's?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll just stick with my guns. I mean, I still think it's going to be the Fritz and Felix winner. The winner of quarter two, I think, is going to go on to win the tournament on the men's side. So if you still see good prices on them, with the Felix one being definitely one that stands out, I would jump on it. I mean, Felix has a really tough second round match against Kirin Khachanov. I don't know if he's going to win that one, but if he gets through that, it's a little bit easier up until he goes to the quarterfinals. So I still think that those two players look great. By the way, Medvedev has looked great, knock on wood for you, but yep. I think that has looked way better than I would have expected after the last few weeks heading into the tournament. On the woman's side, I still think it's going to be Coco. I have those plays on Pegula, Coco, and Iga, so as long as it's one of those three, I'll be happy, but I think that Coco is playing the best tennis of anyone right now.
Carlito's down to plus 130 on the men's side, by the way, for those scoring at home. Plus 130 yep. on Carlos. All right, to college football week number one. You write extensively about all sports. You got some college football plays this week. What do you got?
Yeah, the first one I have is the Friday night game, Miami and Stanford. I took the over 47.5. I just think that this Miami offense, like we've seen it now years, you know, it's been a top 10 offense. I think that the passing game is going to be spectacular once again. I think that Mensah is going to prove to be an upgrade over Carson Beck, who I know is now looking, you know, pretty sharp in, you know, the NFL at the moment. But I do think Mensah has put up bigger numbers than the two guys that, you know, preceded him as transfer quarterbacks with the Hurricanes. And I think he's going to look great. I think he has his, you know, number one receiver coming over from Duke. So the skill position talent is there. I think Miami is going to be able to move the ball in this game. And Stanford, I think, is going to be able to do the same. I think that I was really encouraged with what I saw from Stanford last week, especially in the passing game. I think that that is going to be a much improved offensive team throughout the course of this season. And I just feel like we saw in the second half, Hawaii did whatever they want against that Stanford defense. So I don't really see where the stops are coming from. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game.
I'm going to the Bay tomorrow. Am I crazy not to go to this game? Should I finagle my way into this Miami-Stanford?
That'd be cool. Yeah, that'd be fun.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Try to go to that. All right, Tulane.
That's a really, really nice campus.
Oh, it's have you seen sunken diamond, the baseball stadium? It's beautiful.
No, absolutely. I haven't.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
It's a decent school.
It's all right. If you can get in, it's so funny. Like, because we went through the whole like college process with Gracie. It's like to get into Stanford now. You know what you're like competing against? Forget your grades and your SAT being like perfect at 1600.
17 extracurricular activities.
Oh, and
right?
It's not just those. Yeah. It's literally like, oh yeah, this girl is on the weekends. She's 16 years old, right, in high school.
Yeah.
She's helping to rescue people stranded on mountains.
Sure, yeah.
That's what I'm competing
teaching
against.
Teaching deaf kids how to play musical instruments.
Like stuff like that.
It's just incredible.
It's amazing. Real quick. Before
what is it in Saving Silverman when J.D. McNugent's like, oh, I went to SU. She's like, oh, Stanford? She's like, no, Subway University.
Great movie drop. Love it.
all right, more with Zach after the break. We got thoughts on Tulane Duke from Zach as well. LSU Clemson, and then we're going to get into, I don't know, I'm just going to spring this on Zach. Maybe some awards thoughts, maybe the Heisman, maybe NFL awards, things that he has bet, things that he's thinking about, where he sees the value. We will do all that. Football, and of course, don't forget, he's just half of the Zach and Crack team. Crack coming up later, and Cleve TA in between. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Big.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game, live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. Look at that. The world's largest sports book behind us.
Yes.
Stadium swim. You want to bet outdoors?
Chill in the pool. Escalator still being worked on.
Lay out in the sun. Best escalator in the world as well.
Mm-hmm.
Gives you vertigo. It's a little side effect. I just want to read this one tweet. Michael Montesano, our buddy. According to Tom Tango's numbers, The Miz And did you see the Miz's performance yesterday?
Yeah.
In the Brewers' come-from-behind win, I think they were behind at one point, yeah. They overcame the Miz's performance. Miz went four innings, gave up five earned runs and five hits, five Ks against four walks, like a very un-Miz-like performance.
Oh, my.
Yeah, Chicago was up 5-3 at one point in that game. But what Michael Montesano wants to point out is that Tom Tango's numbers, and I pointed this out when we went over this yesterday, the distance between the Miz and Christopher Sanchez of the Phillies, 80.2 to 74.9, is tighter than the distance between Cam Schlittler and Dylan Cease, which is what I was pointing out with the Tango numbers yesterday, which intuitively makes no sense whatsoever. And by the way, the betting market doesn't say that it makes sense either.
I mean,
I know Tango's formula is predictive, but the reason for that and the Tango process and the Tango formula is because of, I think Cam has a 3-win lead over Dylan Cease. Well, Dylan Cease won yesterday for the Blue Jays, so he has a 2-win lead over Dylan Cease. Although Schlittler won yesterday too. No, Schlittler did not get the win for the Yankees. Bednar did. So it's a 2-win lead now. So that's, you know, I still believe that if Dylan Cease flirted with another no-no, that betting market right now, Cam Schlittler is -215, Dylan Cease is +190. The Miz is still -600 against Salen Sanchez.
Down from 1,400, though, yesterday when we looked at this?
Yeah. What Montesano's just saying is that it's interesting that the formula that is tried and true, right, that has picked, 85% of the last two decades of Cy Young winners, strangely has the gap wider between what the betting market is telling you is a much closer race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
I'm not reading into the Tango thing too much because they're still leading. Both the right guys are still leading, I think. With apologies to Dylan Cease. Back to Zach Cohen, who's kind enough to join us here for a second segment. Zach, I'd be remiss before we get back to your college football plays. I'd be remiss if I didn't give you the chance to chime in on the whole Kawhi thing as well. You being the host of Hardwood Handicappers, the basketball podcast that Zach is the host of. And sometimes when Kelly feels like, you know, spending some time, he comes on as well.
Occasionally on Tuesdays.
What can you add about Kawhi? What was your reaction?
Yeah, well, it's funny. They asked me if I wanted to do an episode, and I'm like, you know, there's really not that big of a betting implication right now. Like, you know, whether or not the Clippers have picks doesn't change the way we're betting on this season. But look, it's a huge penalty. I am happy that they did dish this one out because I do think that this was getting really tricky and just not something you wanted to see replicated throughout the rest of the league. Like, it ended up being really messy, and I think messier than a lot of people really thought. I think a lot of people, you know, believe that these players are, you know, paid under the table. But, you know, seeing it and seeing how drastic it was just wild. And like everything that Pablo Torre seemed to uncover was true and more. So I don't know. I thought that it was really good for basketball fans. I don't know if they're going to feel it that way right now that the Clippers got this harsh of a penalty. It sucks for Clippers fans who did nothing wrong and now have to watch a terrible product for a couple of years. But yeah, I was happy that the league actually did something and did something that big.
You don't think it's done, do you?
It might be. I think if Ballmer was smart, it'd be done. But I think he might be fighting back here.
I'm actually rooting for a fight.
I'm rooting for a fight, too.
Yeah.
If the Clippers are going to be irrelevant, this is back to old school Clippers. They're going to be irrelevant for the next 15 years. Like, might as well get a fight out of this.
I'm rooting for a fight with college football, too. Lane Kiffin versus, you know, the SEC, or against college football, I should say.
The only problem is I hate when the legal system has to get involved. Like, if the leagues could just settle this stuff themselves, that would be nice.
Last question on this, Zach. Where are the Raptors now in the pecking order of Eastern Conference teams?
So with Kawhi, I would have them at 3. And I would think that they would have a real chance of winning the Eastern Conference. Like, if you tell me Kawhi's healthy by the time the playoffs roll around, like, I really do think that that 5-man unit to end games where you have Leonard playing with both Barnes and Murray Boyles is just going to be impossible to score on. I think that that's going to be a special front court defensively. And I think the team is just good enough in terms of firepower in the backcourt that they would be a really tough out for anyone in the East. So I think that they have a real shot of winning if they do get this trade to go through and they don't have to throw in anything extra. I think it, as constructed, I think the trade was like Ingram, Dick, and picks. I think that that would be a move that makes them a contender.
I think Zach and I for a while have been a little higher on this Raptors team than most, but right there, I'm with Zach third. It's third. Knicks 76ers I'll put ahead of them, but then it's as far as to win the Eastern Conference. I will put it that way, though. This is the same conversation we have like with the Cincinnati Bengals all summer, right? Do I have any interest in betting over on the Raptors win total? No, not really, because I got to count on Kawhi's health and a bunch of things to go right. But you're telling me this team rolls in healthy into the playoffs? Yeah, I think they got a really, really big chance of winning it.
And for those who would say, hey, but isn't Kawhi 35 years old? Yes, but last year, 27.9 points a game.
He had a great season.
Yeah.
Okay. Back to college football. You already gave us the over in the Stanford-Miami game tomorrow night in Palo Alto. How about Tulane and Duke? Tulane is a 9.5-point dog, I believe, in this one.
Yeah, so it's actually down to 7.5, but I would still play it there. Like, I was going to take the points almost no matter what. I mean, as long as I was getting at least a touchdown, I was going to be taking Tulane in this game. I just feel like Duke did a lot while Darian Mensah was there to kind of accommodate him, and it turned into a very high-scoring team that really didn't defend all that well. And I feel like that is going to be something that it's going to be really hard for Manny Diaz to kind of recover, like a defensive identity. And I just don't know what this team is going to look like, because offensively they're going to be a lot worse with Mensah being replaced with Walker Egitt. And I just don't think that the offensive line is going to be very good this year. So if they're not a great offensive team and the defense isn't much, much better, I think that they are one of the biggest regression candidates, you know, imaginable in the ACC. And Tulane, really not sure what to expect out of them either. Like, we've seen John Summerall go to Florida. They lost a lot of talent from last year's team, but they do have a relatively big budget, and they did go out and acquire a lot of players in the transfer portal. I feel like I feel better about Tulane being one of the better teams in their conference than I do Duke, and I just feel like this is a lot of points for a week one game where you're talking about a Duke team with a ton of question marks.
More marquee matchup this weekend, obviously, and speaking of Lane Kiffin, LSU hosting Clemson. LSU a 10-point favorite. Should they be on upset alert? How are you playing this?
I think LSU is going to roll in this game. I'm laying the 10. I think that LSU did really well to bring back Blake Baker, who had made that defense better in each of his last two seasons under Brian Kelly. And I think that the talent is even better with Kiffin there and, you know, doing what he does in the portal, which is just masterful and borderline shady, depending on who you ask. But I think that the Tigers, or the LSU Tigers, have, you know, one of the better, you know, defensive coordinators in the SEC, and they're going to figure out that side of the ball. And offensively, don't think you ever really have to worry about a Lane Kiffin team, but I love Sam Leavitt as a quarterback. I watched him a lot out here because I am in Arizona. I watch Arizona State quite a bit. He was fantastic under Kenny Dillingham. I know that he's going to be able to operate, you know, a good offense again. And I think that the skill position players that they have there are out of this world. So I just really think it's going to be difficult for Clemson, which has not been the same defensively since Brent Venables left, to stop LSU. And I do not like Clemson's quarterback situation. I don't like what we've seen out of their offense the last few years. I think that they are starting to make some steps in the right direction in terms of, you know, recruiting and using the transfer portal to try to stay, you know, on pace with some of the bigger teams in college football. But I think that they are a little bit behind right now.
Okay. So Miami Stanford over 47.5 from Zach. Tulane plus 9.5 versus Duke. He still likes the 7.5. LSU laying the wood against Clemson. Real quick, 60 seconds. I don't know if it's Heisman or we go to the NFL for an award or a season long. What's your favorite in a season long category right now?
I mean, I wrote up a ton of Heisman stuff for the guide, and the one player that I've added since then is Keelan Russell. And I think I spoke about that with you guys last week, but the player that I'm starting to come around on that I might end up throwing in something before the season starts is Bryce Underwood with Michigan. It's 38-1. I'm higher on Michigan than most people are. That was one of my win total overs in the guide. I think that they're going to win 9 games. I think there's a chance they win 10. I know that they have a lot of really tough games on that schedule, but I love Kyle Whittingham. I think that he is a great head coach. I think it was a really good hire for a team with all of that kind of messiness before this. And I do think that Jason Beck has proven to be an elite offensive coordinator. Just look at what he did with Devin Dampier in Utah last year. Like, if Underwood is now operating a system that makes things really easy on him, we know he has the size and the talent to do some special things. So I think he's going to put up some big numbers.
Bryce Underwood, we're showing 38-1 again in the Heisman market, where the short shots are CJ Carr of Notre Dame and Arch Manning of Texas, 7-1 and plus 750 respectively. Zach, thank you, sir. Appreciate it as always.
Thanks, guys.
Good luck with the tennis. Zach Cohen, everybody. Betting on X on the old Twitter machine. Cleve TA joins us on the other side, as does Mike Reardon from Right Angle Sports with the live college football release. Let's do it next on a number.